Hello, and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Ventham, who are both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. As upstanding Christians, do we admit our faults, our weaknesses, and our sins? When should we confess? Should we ever remain quiet? We're talking about brokenness on this week's episode. We consider some instances of brokenness in some of the great biblical characters in the New Testament. And we talk about my approach to singing about brokenness in some of our music with Lion of Judah. We then go on to talk about how and when we should talk about these issues in order to encourage each other in the church. So let's get started, and I'll catch you on the other side.
Hi, I'm Mark Bentham.
Hello, and I'm Graham Nichols.
And I am Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. This week we are talking about brokenness. So, who here has broken a limb before?
Nope.
You haven't?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
That's falling flat, isn't it?
I haven't broken a limb, but I've broken a number of things. I've broken three ribs. I'm not sure whether it's the same rib three times, but I've had three rib breaks, mostly from fighting. Once when I was pulling a kite. Yeah, like it with a youth group.
Is it fighting with a youth group?
Fighting your brother, we could have got.
There's a game where, like, on your knees, you're on your knees and your hands, and you have to grab the other person, the other person's hands. Whoever ends up sort of flat on the floor is lost.
Right.
And I was so enthusiastic that I crunched down on the floor and broke a rib.
And that happened three separate occasions.
No, that was one of the times. The other time I was trying to be overconfident and fly a big sort of 4 meter kite at the beach, stony beach.
Right.
Got pulled over with a gust of wind, crashed down, broke my rib. The other time was a football injury. Wow. So that's three ribs.
Yeah.
And I also broke my heel, which is quite difficult to do, jumping off a church roof. I'd been cleaning or something, and I jumped off onto the pavement thinking I'm totally confident.
Yeah.
And cracked my heel.
That must have been
pretty
awful.
Badly. Oh, it's terrible. The trouble is you walk looking like an idiot because you walk on your tiptoe while it's recovering, and that's all you can do. They can't bandage it or anything, so you just walk along looking just like weird.
Yeah.
Until it's healed.
He's a quirky guy. That's how he walks.
Yeah, so have you broken anything?
No. Does a fracture count as a break?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I fractured my wrist. And that was also at football, which is why I don't play football anymore.
So basically what we're saying, Mark hasn't broken anything. Wow. Yeah. But I have broken windows.
You must have bendy bones.
Well, I've damaged my back, but I haven't broken it.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
So that's why we're talking about brokenness.
Yeah, so we'll
see
you next
week. But
that's
not why at all. But,
yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about spiritual brokenness.
Spiritual brokenness.
And part of the reason why we're talking about it is because in our preaching series on the Sunday morning, we were going through the back end of Luke, and we got to Peter's denial, and it just kind of raised a lot of issues that, you know, here was a guy who the Lord warned that he would deny, that he would be sifted, that the Lord would use it for his good. He doesn't think, and then he denies Christ three times, and you see a man who is broken, you know, who runs, he's in tears. And, you know, the only reason possibly that we could have had the account of Peter's denial is because Peter told us that's what he did. So here was a man who was broken, clearly. I mean, this is a moment of big shame, a moment of real hurt for him. You know, he had denied his Lord. And you get that lovely bit in Luke where Luke recalls how Jesus looked at him at that moment. It's that sense of piercing his very soul. So here's a guy, this is at his lowest point, and yet it's recorded for us. And I think part of the beauty of that story is that it is there because it's helping us see, actually, we are broken people. Actually, we're all broken. I might not have broken a bone, but I am broken in many other ways. And actually, we don't talk about it. And I think that's partly why we wanted to do a little bit of a podcast, because I think part of being ordinary is that we are ordinary broken people. And that's good news, because we have a Savior who can restore and fix. But if you're not aware or you're not talking about it, I think sometimes it just means that we're either in shame loops, we're always feeling the shame of our brokenness, or we're feeling wretched because we don't know how to deal with that, or it leads to great anxiety, or it leads to great despair, or it leads to great discouragement, or it leads to having no hope. And actually, we just got to, I think we just got to be better. And I think it's a culture, British cultural thing, that we just don't talk about our weaknesses. We don't talk about where we struggle. And, you know, how do we develop those kind of areas? And, you know, so we're trying to do that as part of the Love Church. So even as elders, we're always, we gather, as you know, on a Friday morning to pray. It's Friday morning to pray, isn't it, Graham?
And sometimes have breakfast. Yeah.
And sometimes have breakfast, but not today, and Graham. Anyway, but part of that is we ask one another, you know, how we can pray for, and in the back of our minds, we're thinking about the progress in faith and, you know, where the struggles are as well. So we're trying to be open with one another. It's not always hugely successful, but we're trying to talk about these areas where we're wrestling with. We're trying to encourage that in our community groups, that people talk about the wrestles where it's appropriate. You know, we can't be confessing all our sin and all our brokenness, but I think we've got to get better at doing it in some way.
What's your experience, Josh, been of sort of talking about brokenness or failure or anxiety? Because you're involved in this band, Lion of Judah, and you've written some songs kind of connected with that. What were you trying to express in those songs?
I suppose I don't see the point in being anything other than completely honest as you can muster the courage to be, because yeah. I think, as we've spoken about a number of times on the podcast and off the podcast, that being honest is the only way that you can really face up to the challenges of your life, the things you struggle with, and begin to in some way address those. And I also think it's helpful for other people, Christians and non-Christians, to see that demonstrated. And I think, just personally, I am always struck by people who've had lives of struggle and difficulty, and you relate to that struggle and difficulty. And what's beautiful about those stories is that you always see the power of God in that. Mm. And Paul talks about that, doesn't he? About seeing how God's power is made perfect in his weakness.
Yeah.
So our weakness is a part of this equation where in which we see God's power in our lives demonstrated. And it's what we know. We know brokenness. Mm. And so that's what I like to write about quite often, because that's what we know.
You're telling us about a song you wrote about Hosea. Mm. Tell us a little bit about, and the response you got from it.
Yeah, so it actually happened because Graham was doing there was a sermon series through Hosea, and Graham, I think it was the first one where you were kind of introing the book, and you set it up as a rare glimpse into the emotional life of God, because this is a story of God saying, the brokenness that you exhibit, the things that you do through your brokenness, is painful for me. And the way he does that is by using this kind of analogy of a husband and a wife, an unfaithful wife. And so I wrote a song that was kind of not explicitly talking about the characters of Gomer and Hosea, but talking about the unfaithfulness of God's people, and particularly my unfaithfulness to him. And because I was so struck by the fact that not only is that a sin in theory, but that it actually hurts God, that when I'm doing that, that causes him pain. Mm-hmm. And that despite my repetitive sin that continues to cause him pain, that he continues to run after me and at great cost buys me back. That's the point of the story, and I think that that's a really important thing for us to internalize and recognize, the how bad sin is, you know, how painful it is for God, and what it takes for him to buy us back. Mm. So I wrote that, and I think it was, I think for the most part it was received well, and lots of people were saying, you know, I recognize that in my life, and that's a good thing to talk about. I think others didn't understand, and they thought, you know, how can you sing lines like "Deny your name, I do it every day"? You know, that's, the Bible says you'll be condemned. So I think there was different responses. I'm not sure entirely where that came from in that particular person, but there were certainly different reactions to that. And I think sin and the apparentness of sin, talking about sin, does cause different reactions in people.
Yeah, I think that's true of lots of things. Just by the way, if you're listening to this podcast on something like Spotify, it's very easy to find Lion of Judah on there, and the song is "Again and Again," but also on other music platforms you can find it, like you can find this podcast on lots of other platforms.
Oh, shameless plug.
Yeah. I think Paul's example is really helpful in that he doesn't so much confess specific sins, but he confesses the struggle with sin in general and, you know, concludes at the end of Romans 7 with, a wretched man that I am. And so you're thinking, well, if he has to confess that, then I need to confess that in some way. I think to do with sin specifically, there's it's a rough rule of thumb that private sins need to be confessed public. Sorry, privately. Private sins need to be confessed privately, publicly. So if you've done something in public that you know, offends the church, offends God, then you need to confess that publicly. I think private sins need to be confessed in a different way. And I also think, you know, we can't be so self-indulgent as to always make it about us and our brokenness and so forth. So I think there's a measure in that. But I think being transparent about our struggles. So whether it's actually saying, you know, I twisted the truth today, I lusted after this person today, I made an idol of food today. And I'm not sure it's particularly helpful to, you know, constantly every time we meet someone to say, you know, I need to confess these three things to you. Mm. But I think in general saying, you know, I am struggling with this. I am struggling with doubts. I can't remember whether I've said this on another podcast, but I remember once when I was preaching, and I've done it quite often since, but I kind of explicitly said, sometimes, you know, I'm walking the dog, I'm kicking the leaves, and I'm thinking, is this all true? I don't know. And a number of people came up to me and said, I can't believe you said that you actually have doubts about whether it's true. And so I think it's helpful to say that every now and then, you know, rather than constantly saying, I don't know whether this is true or not. You know, most of the time you want to say it's true because you believe it and you need to affirm that and say it. So you can't be totally sort of woolly all the time saying, you know, here's a text, don't know whether it's true or not. But to admit that sometimes you have doubts, I don't think there's any Christian who hasn't had, you know, a moment that comes over you that you think, I just wonder, not so much, you know, the whole thing, but you just have moments of wonder. And I think it's helpful to both confess those, but also kind of work through, so what do I do? You know, how do I help myself? I look at the goodness of God. I look at the example of Christ. And that then flooding back to me comes a sense of his goodness. But for those moments, I was struggling. And then similarly with, you know, with other things. I don't know if, perhaps you two have never had any doubts. So you're now looking at me like, wow, I didn't know you ever had doubts.
Well, I think we all have doubts, don't we, at times. Yeah, I was thinking also actually that we've kind of talking about brokenness in terms of sin,
yeah,
which I think is obvious, but I think there are other brokenness that we sure don't talk about that would yeah be good to get on to in a minute. But yeah. It's striking, isn't it? I think often the same, isn't it? It's when we preach, and if in our preaching we happen to mention that we struggle in a particular area, somehow it resonates.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason it resonates is because of this very reality, either because people have a very wrong view of us,
yeah,
which is they put us, think way too highly of us,
yeah,
put us on a pedestal, think we've got it all sorted, and we haven't. But I think the other thing is it just highlights that we're not talking about this enough, such that it seems so radical, that a preacher says, actually, do you know what, I wrestle with sin. You know, I wrestle with, my predominant sin is fear of man. And so you're kind of, I think we want to just normalize that, but I think obviously there's context, and as you're saying, private, you know, I can't, you know, our last couple of episodes ago, we were talking about porn. You know, you're not going to necessarily confess to a mixed community group that I am wrestling with pornography and all that entails, but.
And why not?
Well, just because, it might be appropriate on one level. But I guess it's the level of detail that you might go into. It might be the age range in that group that would just be appropriate. It's a mix. Sometimes it's not quite appropriate to do so. Although,
so the quality
all
of relationship,
that, I think,
you know,
that
you might have where you could be telling people who you're not in close relationship with that they will view you different. I'm not saying that you should never do it, because sometimes that's a pride thing, not telling it. But it's a question of what's helpful to you, what's glorifying to God, what's helpful to them. To think about. So I think that's why it's harder to make that judgment for sort of half a dozen people or 10 people in a
Say that equation again. That was nice. That was helpful.
What's what's helpful to you, what's helpful to them, what's glorifying to God. Should have said the God bit first, of mm-hmm. course, but you know what I mean. So those kind of things to think about. Mm-hmm. So it may be that if by saying it might be helpful to you, but it might be unhelpful to them. It might not be very glorifying to God. It just, you know, people just then become obsessed with you and thinking about you. So they're not really thinking about God anymore. They're thinking about you, which is not useful. Okay. And I think there's a balance in community groups that...
Or any small group.
Pardon?
Or any small group.
Indeed. That you need to be open enough, because they're small enough that you can be intimate, but there'll always be some kind of limits. I think more likely the issue in community groups to do with this topic of brokenness is that we don't admit it at all. So, you know, leaving aside some particular topics, we try and create questions in our church where we have a sermon on Sunday morning, we talk about it on a Tuesday or Wednesday in some of the groups. And my observation is that people will always turn a me, you, me question into a them question. So you'll say, you know, what particular areas of temptation do you, you know, what do you struggle with in prayer? Or, you know, what do people think? They'll always turn into, this is what people generally struggle with. Yeah. Or I might be a person who struggles with this, rather than, yeah, I really find it difficult to pray. It's really hard at the moment. Or I do lose my temper, rather. That they'll more say, losing your temper is a sin, but it's just slightly removed. And I know I do it myself sometimes as well.
And part of that, though, is the nature of small groups. So they're not, if people aren't committed to the same group, turn up each week faithfully, then you end up, the group dynamics are constantly changing. So then people don't have that sense of comfort with one another, that they feel able to actually relate at a level. So I think that's part of the issue. But I think it's also just pride, that we want to maintain this image that we are sorted and we're spiritually sorted.
Yeah, I think it's pride, and I think it's culture as well, though. You've got to keep trying to change the habits of people. I know in my group, I've, you know, talked for quite a few minutes about a struggle in general, a struggle in not so much as a sin, but a, you know, a struggle to evangelize, or a, you know, a frustration I find with people and something. And I'll kind of finish it, and you feel quite sort of not self-righteous at all. You feel like you've rather, you know, exposed a wound, and you feel a little bit vulnerable. And sometimes, and some of my group will be listening to this, so they'll think, oh, or they'll think, bleh. But sometimes you finish that little paragraph of a speech, and no one kind of says anything because they're not quite sure what to do with it.
Or they try and fix it.
Yeah. Here yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Or, you know, like, you shouldn't be that. You know, sometimes they might say, well, I struggle too. You know, we don't want to turn small groups into just a massive kind of festival of talking about all our
But I think what it's probably revealing again is that we're probably not talking about these kind of issues in our marriages.
Yeah.
We've probably not got close friendships with people who we can then have these conversations with outside of that. So in other words, I'm not talking about a small group because I'm just not in the habit of talking about it full stop. You know, so I'm not necessarily talking with anyone about what I'm really wrestling with or struggling with or how I'm feeling or thinking at this time.
Yeah.
And I think it's highlighting, I think, part of the individualistic culture we live in, and this sense of, well, it's the masks, isn't it? You know, we put on the mask, you know, we joke about it, you know, on a Sunday morning, the Sunday morning miracle, you know, you're having the argument in the car, the kids are screaming, everyone gets out of the car and everyone's like, hi, how are you doing? We're all good, thanks, you know, perfect day. You know, it's like there's this transformation. And I think it's this hiding of the reality. And whereas the gospel should set me free to be able to talk about these things, because actually in Christ, I am hidden. I have nothing else to hide. You know, I'm hidden in him. So I'm free to be able to talk about these areas.
Yeah.
I think one of the areas of brokenness is not just sin, but struggles.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in terms of, I don't think we talk enough about necessarily our struggles with things like anxiety or depression.
Yeah.
Or my weakness in any of these areas. And again, I think it's a cultural thing. I think it's, we're afraid of what people think, but, you know, all my struggles with parenting, or my struggles with, You know, all these areas are areas where I'm broken, where I lack wisdom, where I need help, where I am struggling in lots of, and I just not kind of helping this. I want to protect whatever it is, and I don't know how you help it, shake it.
I think some of it is modeling. I think it's helpful. When I took a breath just now, I was going to say those things that you just said. So you're well ahead of me, or we are so in sync, or something like that.
Or both.
Yeah. But I think brokenness and vulnerability in our weaknesses that are not necessarily sinful, but they're just things we're struggling with in life in general as part of living in a fallen world where our bodies and our minds are not perfect. So I think those are helpful to talk about. I think modelling, not so much always confession of sin, but when we're chatting one-to-one, if someone tells me about a parenting issue or a relationship, husband-wife issue, say, my tendency might be to say, here's the biblical principle, or here's how we fixed it in our marriage or our thing. And that's helpful sometimes to give advice, but it's also helpful sometimes to say, yeah, we struggled with that. I was speaking to someone recently and they were talking about an argument they had as a couple, and I could have said, well, this is how you could have dealt with it, da da da. But I actually said, yeah, I had a really bad argument with Caroline, and I kind of gave a little, that's my wife, and I gave a little bit of detail without explicitly, and it got a bit complicated because I worked out there were some bits I didn't want to share for various reasons because it wasn't fair to Caroline. But I did try to illustrate, you know, I'd actually been away to Uganda, as mentioned in some of the other things. I keep getting it in every podcast now, but I'd been away. I was tired. I was irritable. My wife was talking to me about some stuff and I was unreasonable, and I wanted to explain that to the person, to say, yeah, I struggle with this too, before saying this is how we need to deal with it. I needed to own, yeah, some of the things were a bit irritating that I were receiving, but actually I didn't deal with it very well. There were physical reasons, I was really tired, but there were actually emotional reasons that I was being quite selfish, and you know, had other pressures on me that were, you know, so trying to give an example of how I needed to reflect on it and repent. So sorry, Caroline, about that. But you know what I mean? I think in answer to your question about how do we help people, some of it is confessing our own faults. Some of it is actually taking people through the process of restoration.
And hearing and loving and knowing what their situation is, so we can apply.
Yeah.
Rightly, but I think...
Are you talking to Christians now in general? Is this the job of the church leaders?
I think all Christians should be able to listen and help mm-hmm. folk. You know, and if we trip and lane, talk about love, no, speak, do. And I think it's always a helpful thing, you know, when we're talking with people, to love them by seeking to understand their situation and their particular dynamics before I seek to speak into it or seek to do anything. So I think...
Or get them to do anything.
Yeah. Or get them to do anything. So I think part of loving people in this whole area of brokenness is just to help people to know that they are loved, and to seek to understand their particular brokenness and how it works out. So that you're not then speaking unhelpfully into the situation. And so it's we want to identify with, we have the same struggles, but the struggles may be worked out in very different ways. Now, we all get this wrong all the time because we're all quick to probably speak too quickly. And I'm sure I've irritated loads of people by speaking way too quickly. But it is that love and that no. And I think we've encouraging to people to speak brokenness is we've all got to slow down and listen to people so that we're not wrongly judging or wrongly speaking, but actually seeing to love people and know and understand what they're struggling with in their brokenness, which might be a parallel situation to mine, but it will be different because the issues may just be, it may be exactly the same.
Yeah, I think it's entering into people's experience when it's not ours is part of how we minister. I don't particularly suffer with anxiety, or I do, but perhaps not in the same way that many people do. So it's hard, or I don't suffer with depression at the moment. So it's hard then, it's an effort that I need to make, not just to say, well, I don't experience that, so I can't really understand it. It's out of my... To actually understand and enter into it. I mean, you, Josh, have, in your song lyrics, have talked about your own anxiety. What have you found helpful or not helpful from other Christians, or in how you kind of talk about that, deal with that? Anything helpful insight you could give, just to put you on the spot?
In dealing with anxiety?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that the first step to dealing with it is being honest. Again, I just think honesty is so key to all of this. And so, yeah, being honest with yourself and then being honest with the close people around you, people who you trust. A big part of it for me was even telling my wife, actually, and then my mum after that, because those are the people that you, I think, instinctively want to look big in front of.
You know,
especially as a husband, as a man, I think you want to seem in control and you want to seem like you can handle stuff. So that's a big step. And then for me, I think that understanding that there are deep heart issues involved in all in everything in life, all my behaviors, all my feelings, they drill down, and when you go deep, there's heart issues that need to be addressed. And so you can do things to alleviate symptoms, and there's great, and they're great things, you can do those. But I think what I was aware of was that there was deep spiritual heart issues that I needed to consider. And I was helped with that by Mark, and I think that was, I want to say as well that wasn't a quick ticket to success either. It wasn't like, okay, let's have 5 sessions and then you're going to be fixed. Doesn't work like that. Brokenness is much deeper, isn't it? And so that takes patience and time and just reliance upon God, and recognizing that your circumstances should not change your view of God. So even if God doesn't relieve this right now, that's okay. I know my ultimate position is safe and secure, and to be able to be safe and secure in that brokenness. Is that fair? Because I think we all recognize that brokenness is not necessarily fixable straight away, or even maybe ever. So how do we deal with the idea that, do you know what, I might, because I've wrestled with it myself, I might have anxiety for the rest of my life. I might struggle with that, but that's okay. So how do we deal with that?
Well, I think that's a really helpful, because I think some of the part of it is that we want brokenness just to go away, and we live in a broken world, so it's not going to go away. And yet I've got to work out how, in the midst of the heat of a situation, how do I respond with gospel fruit and not with kind of thorns? You know, if you've done the Real Change course, you'll understand. And actually, the only way that you do that is by keep coming to the cross. You keep going back to Christ, who actually does understand all of these issues in a way that actually we never would. And actually, the cross is the only hope I have, isn't it? The cross gives me the hope of the future, but it also gives me the hope of now, that actually Christ, you know, in my weakness, gives me the grace. His grace is sufficient in my weakness. And actually holding on to and clinging to that truth actually helps me to keep on keeping on, one day at a time, actually. I love all that Ed Welch talks about in these issues. It's talking about manna. And actually, the Lord only gave the Israelites manna for the day. And the New Testament is actually, he gives the grace we need for the day. And so in my brokenness, I might recognize that actually it's going to be forever. And as I think about that, that freaks me out, because I think, gosh, another 40, 50 years of wrestling with this. And that can then become overwhelming, make me even more anxious. But actually what I can do is break it down to the sense of, actually, I just need to worry about today. And actually, I don't even need to worry about today, because God will give me the grace that I need for today. And he'll give me the grace I need for today and each day for the next 50 years.
And I think the Bible, Old and New Testament, has lots of images and ideas. You know, in Jesus, we have someone who goes to the broken and who fulfills the Old Testament idea of healing those with wounds, those with broken hearts. you know, he heals the brokenhearted, he binds up their wounds, the idea in Isaiah, I think. And so that's the God we have who actually comes to the broken, deals with the broken, brokenness of sin, brokenness of weakness and fragility, and, you know, ultimately the brokenness of living in a sinful world and dying. That's all healed by Jesus. Some of it now, some of it in glory. And now we live in the light of that, accept our brokenness, and enjoy the community of God's people to help us in that and through that.
Thanks for sticking with us right till the end. If you want to ask any questions or seek support or make suggestions, you can reach us at ordinary@cchh.org.uk. Join us again next week for another episode of Ordinary.